Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your host, LaToya Ferguson, and if you are a longtime listener of Angel on Top, that is definitely a new situation. Moving forward for season three, and hopefully beyond, I will be filling the enormous shoes, just huge shoes, of Brittany and Laura. Their shoes are just so large. It's going to be a little different. I will have a revolving door of guest hosts with me to help me not talk by myself, because as you can hear, when I have to talk by myself, it's very awkward and I start going on about shoes. Looking forward to going on this wild adventure with all of you listeners to Angel on Top and this wild adventure of Angel Season 3, which just by my estimation, it pretty much slaps. It rips, it bangs, possibly bops, and that's just what you can expect from me, the kind of analysis of television you can expect from me, a professional television critic. This week, we're watching the Angel Season 3 premiere, Heartthrob, which was written and directed by Angel showrunner David Greenwalt. It aired on the WB on September 24th, 2001, 1 week before the Buffy Season 6 premiere, Bargaining, on UPN. This is the one where Angel has to deal with the network change or death of Buffy and is faced with his past once more in the form of a proto-Spike and Drusilla situation. I am here today with a couple of voices you may know. Kristen Russo, Jenny Owen Youngs of Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
What?
Hello, my friends.
Hello. How did we get here? What's happening?
I do wonder at this point if they can hear the sheer terror in my voice.
No.
No.
Seasoned professional?
LaToya, it's a big day. It's a big day. And I want you to know that in the intro to the first ever episode that you are anchoring here, you've already taught me something. You didn't even mean to. And I had no idea that Angel aired a week before Buffy.
It did. None.
I had no clue.
I was doing the research basically to kind of figure out why that was. Obviously, not the same network. Angel was on Monday and then Buffy was on Tuesday. So that actually kind of works in tandem. But again, these networks were not working in tandem. These networks were being very petty. And we'll talk more about that. So from what I could tell, it seems that it links up in a way with the timing of these episodes. So a certain plot point in both of them can happen.
Exactly.
Can be confluent.
I also thought, because when I watched this episode today in preparation for this, the debut of season three of Angel on Top, I was thinking, well, this is a bit of like a bummer because you already know that Buffy's not dead if you've watched Bargaining. So the whole like through line of Angel grieving the loss of Buffy would be not as powerful. So I guess it would have had a day, but it having a whole week is also kind of intense for the fandom at the time.
Right now, Buffy is still very much dead. They are treating her as such. She's dead to the WB, which means her name is not mentioned. She is Buh, or the B word. And just when you thought that the networks couldn't get more petty in this whole Buffy's no longer on the WB thing, they do. Jenny, what did you think about that?
You know, I think it's funny. I think there's so much at play here. Like, do you know something we don't know about why the WB did not renew Buffy, but did renew Angel.
Was it the patriarchy?
Was it people wanting more money?
I don't think it was the
same.
I think it was not the patriarchy, but it was Sarah specifically wanting more money. Because I know that when Angel gets canceled, it's for similarly dumb reasons. It's for even more dumb reasons, and we'll get there eventually. The WB and decision making for a network I love greatly, not always great, I will say. And it is kind of a one-sided pettiness in a way, because UPN will allow Buffy to say the name Angel. I will say that. As much as they're not allowing the B word to be said on Angel. But I think if we pretend that the WB isn't the one who mandated this, I think it's also a good choice for Angel the show, just to, like, finally it's standing on its own. And I think a lot of season three, it will allow that to be shown. And it is ridiculous, the length they go to not say the B word. But you know what? How about this? We're not saying the B word until they do on Angel on Top now.
Hell yeah! Oh my God, I love this. I love this rule. I would like to also point out something that I've realized in this conversation about Angel and Buffy.
Oh!
About Angel and the B word starting on the same network and then splitting here. It's kind of ironic that Angel on Top and Buffering the Vampire Slayer were on two separate feeds until the moment they split networks, and now we've come together. That seems powerful.
We basically decided we're forming the CW early.
Yes!
That's what would happen.
Horny teens. Horny teens.
I want to know in pod feed how you're feeling. You know, like, we're just here. You're here. You're anchoring a podcast about Angel, a show that you love for the first time in this space. Like, how are you doing? What can we get? Do you need anything?
I just need to talk about Angel.
Great.
Angel season three, my first ever season of Angel. So, you know, near and dear to my heart.
So this is where you began your watch.
This is where I began my watch, like a few episodes into season three. Yeah.
This is just meant to be. It's just meant to be. You know, it's just the cosmos are aligning. The buttons on Angel's shirt are slowly popping off one by one. Mm. All things are coming together.
I mean, we can talk about Angel's shirts. Season three. spawns a glorious time of Angel. He's wearing light blues. He's wearing some color now. It's not just straight black. And you know what? It's good to me.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for it.
It is good. I think it's an interesting choice to have him in, like, all white and then a khaki overshirt and then a blue button up right after the love of his life has died.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting choice to bring color in.
Angel,
episode one.
Angel is thriving. He's 30 and flirty and thriving. He's on his own in the big city. His best girl's got a bob now. We love to see it.
Oh my God. Don't even get me started on Cordelia. Don't even get me started.
Let's Cordelia? Get you started on Cordelia, please.
Cordelia in this episode is, I just can't. First of all, her fucking hair. She looks phenomenal. Second of all, one of the first things that she does is she puts on a necklace and is like, so what do you think about how this brings out my breasts? And is like, you were all thinking it. And I love her. And third of all, she's like the fucking voice of reason in this whole episode. Oh,
she is.
I love her.
She is. Angel may have a soul, but she is Angel's heart, basically.
Oh my God,
LaToya! You can't just go and do that in the middle of a recording. Like,
I will do that. I will be doing that a lot this season. I am sorry. She is the only one who knows Angel well enough to know he may look great. The fact that Angel is smiling and content should tell them something is wrong. And it's not even like color.
Yeah, set off those alarms.
Yeah.
It's not even like a moment of true happiness, content. It's just like a still being, which is not Angel. He's not brooding. So they should be worried. But they're like, we got cool stuff.
Jenny, you look very upset by something that I posited, and I would love to know what it is.
No. I just have a question. with regard to one of Cordelia's looks in this episode, right at the top, they're coming back from killing a bunch of demons. And I'm wondering if anyone can confirm or definitively deny whether Cordelia is wearing pajama pants, whether Cordelia wore pajama pants to the sleigh.
No, it's 2000. They're first
so
of all,
flowy.
How dare you? And second of all, no, Cordelia wasn't wearing pajama pants. It's probably just 2001 type style pants. I don't remember what they were, but I would have noticed if they were pajamas.
I would hope they were pajoveralls, but they are not. So,
oh, my.
I'm sorry, pajoveralls?
Oh, have you not
pajama
heard about
overalls?
Yeah.
Pajama overalls?
Pajoveralls.
You'll have to excuse me. I need to go make a purchase. I'll be right back.
So, yes, we begin our episode 3 months after the events of No Place Like Plurtzglurb.
I was really hoping that I would go without having to say it. So far, I haven't had to say it. So, thank
well,
you.
Now you can say it. Go ahead, Kristen.
No. Place.
Kristen. Kristen.
Plurtzglurb. Plurtzglurb? Plurtzglurb?
Plurtz. It's such a P.
Plurtz.
Glurb.
Glurb. Plurtzglurb.
Yeah. There you go.
Plurtzglurb.
Yeah, Cordelia was a queen for like a minute. And they I like how they bring that into the conversation where she's like, I just really wish I could go back to Pylea. And Angel's like, well, or Wesley, somebody is like, well, you want to go back because you were a queen. Meanwhile, Fred, who can't even leave her room, was like kept as a servant for, you know, 5 years against her will.
Yeah, it's different perspectives for sure. Yeah, so they're dirty, they're dingy. Oh, yeah, we're obsessed with demons. Our lives are sad. We're alone forever. And I guess I've never felt more seen by the cast of Angel until this moment.
Oh, no, it is kind of calling all of us out, too, isn't it?
We're like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, you fucking nerds. This is you. Look at yourself.
I think that they did such a good job in this episode. Like, I didn't really, it didn't hit me until I rewatched it again today, but they do such a good job of making you feel the like familiness of them. Like, I feel like the one of the central purposes of this episode is to let you know that they're no longer just like coworkers. Like, they really are intimately involved with each other. They're committed to each other. They are each other's family. And I feel like they do a really good job with it.
Yeah. One thing I really love that's just understated in this episode is the fact that they all take turns doing chores in the Hyperion, like for the upkeep.
Yes. Also that Wesley is trimming the plant with like a tiny scythe. I don't know what that weapon is called. I love it. I want one for my plants when I trim them.
I like that Wesley's trimming the plants but has not had a hair trim in a while. He's got like quarantine hair, but it like is really suiting him. It has not gotten to the point where it's like, oh no, danger, danger.
That season 3
just
hair,
looks kind
baby.
Of like rugged.
He's been killing demons for 3 months without Angel. This is what happens.
Do you think that Angel should have gone to Vegas, or do you think he made the right choice in going to Sri Lanka?
Oh, yes. Was Vegas a better idea? Yes, because the Sri Lankan monks were demons.
But don't you think Vegas is just like running like full clip with demons? Vegas seems like a place where demons would have a good fucking time.
Yes, but okay, here's the difference. I feel like people go to Vegas to be demonic. Demons and humans all go to Vegas to be demonic.
Okay.
Generally, when you go on like a meditation retreat, you're like not looking for violence. Demons aside, can we talk about Angel's look just in this scene? Because it is good. You would think that this like
also,
beautiful
just,
flowing
just for the listener, I want the listener to know that you are wearing a white t-shirt right now while you're like, Angel in his all white look looks so good.
No, no, this is not about me.
You're
this
like
is
clasping
about
your heart.
I want his outfit is all I'm saying. It's long and flowing, but, you know, not, you know, in a way that you're going to, like, trip over it. It's, like, it just looks, like, so light and airy and lovely. And you would think, or I would think, that someone as, like, tall and hulking as David Boreanaz might not be able to, like, pull that ensemble off so well, but it just, like, looks so great on him. Mm-hmm. And that is my contribution. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
I mean, this is definitely a good wardrobe season for Boreanaz, I will say. I mean, already coming out the gate, we have drooled enough over his outfits.
Yes. David Boreanaz, wearing a stunning ensemble, defeats the demon monks, and then he comes outside and in a tongue that is not English and is also not English with a really bad Irish accent, David Boreanaz says, you know, ugh, demon monks, I should have gone to Vegas. So David Boreanaz is in Sri Lanka.
Well,
in Sri Lanka.
Angel, but sure.
Oh, sorry.
No, Angel they is flew in... him on location to Sri Lanka. They spent that money. They spent those millions of dollars.
Of course, money well spent. Angel's in Sri Lanka. In Sri Lanka, they speak Sinhala, Tamil, English. There's a handful of the 3,400-ish people of Portuguese descent who speak Sri Lankan Portuguese Creole. There's a Muslim community in Sri Lanka that uses Arabic, and seldom used nowadays is Arwi, a written register of Tamil that uses the Arabic script and has extensive lexical influences from Arabic. My question, with all of that set up, is what language is David Boreanaz speaking? And listeners, I know somebody knows what the language is, and also whether it sounds as bad as when David Boreanaz does an English accent or an Irish accent or not. Please let us know, unless LaToya, you already know, which would not shock me in the least.
No. So on Hulu, it just says foreign language.
Yeah,
which is real good at that shit.
And in like on the fandom wiki for this episode in the transcript, it says Tibetan, which is definitely, it's not a Tibetan monastery. So no. So I guess the answer is foreign language.
Yeah. Final answer. Oh, somebody will definitely let us know.
Beautiful, linguistically inclined and informed listeners, if you have this hot intel we so desperately crave, please write in angelontoppodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.
I do have one more discussion point before we move from the Sri Lankan foreign language scene.
Yeah.
Which is that, so I noted before in talking to you, I don't even know if it made it onto an episode, that season 3 like introduced like the wire foo to the fight choreography for Angel. So there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. You see it here. Because we're living in now a post Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon world. Because it just like, just earlier the Oscars happened and it got the award. So we're there, we're looking good. I really like that style for Angel. And I kind of like when a supernatural spinoff has like different fighting styles than like the original show. So I really enjoy that. But I do wonder, it's something I've always kind of wonder, is where does Angel's, I guess, Asian influence as a fighter come from? Mm-hmm. Like, when did he start doing Tai Chi? He wasn't doing it as an Angelus, you know? And obviously, every vampire, when they become a new vampire, like, they get instant basic martial arts training. But, like...
Oh, my God. LaToya, I can't believe
we were just talking about this.
We literally just talked about this in our season premiere episode. We said in episode, we have to ask LaToya what she thinks about how vampires get sired and immediately know a lot of wrestling moves.
I am fine with this. It's just... at least gives them a little bit of a fair fight against the Slayer. They're still going to lose, but it gives them something. They need something. Otherwise, there'd be a lot more bottom feeders in the vampire world if they didn't get that, you know? Give them something. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess like to your point, well, what does Angelus, because Angelus had to retain some of what Angelus experienced has to be retained in Angel and his, like, what he's interested in and what he practices, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not like Angel was doing Tai Chi in the B word show that we cannot name here seasons and seasons ago. Like, that was a long time ago. But where is the root?
Obviously, we know that Angel and Darla, they went all over the world and, you know, but I don't think they were really soaking up the culture as much. Like, they were just eating people and living in the lap of luxury. But I don't think Angelus was really just taking notes and absorbing culture that way and taking Tai Chi classes. So,
yeah, Tai Chi, definitely. I picture like maybe 20 years after. When do we see Angel?
But he's had a
eating rats in New York.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Angel doing Tai Chi as something kind of to calm him and center himself.
Right.
it seems like something so ingrained in him as Angel. So, but I guess we're supposed to believe he just started doing it on Buffy and it's been part of his thing ever since.
Well, but also, right, where, so Angel got a soul a long fucking time ago, right? Like he, like, what's to say? I know that he ate rats in like New York, or I don't know. Where did he eat rats? I just assume it was in New York.
Because New York.
It is New York. Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
That's where you eat rats for sure.
Right.
I mean, he ate rats all over the world, but New York specifically.
Yes. Yeah, but we saw him specifically eating rats. In New York with Whistler, right?
Yeah.
But it there should be time in the timeline for him to have spent some of his rat eating days in other countries across the globe, right?
It's like, did he learn Tai Chi during the Boxer Rebellion? Is that something that is missing from Fool for Love / Darla?
Because he has his soul in that at that moment. Yeah.
But he's still like a mess.
And but maybe that's his turning point.
He's sneaking Tai Chi lessons when Darla's away.
Just a little rat lunch with a side of a Tai Chi course is what Angel's
or
doing.
Hey, a little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover, learning Tai Chi from the rat before eating the rat.
Oh, no.
Oh, R.I.P. What's the rat's name?
Splinter.
Splinter. Oh, that's a horrible crossover.
Sorry.
Anyway, wow. I heard that we were talking about Angel, but I'm very excited about where we just got to.
Angel season 3, The Secret of the Ooze. I do like it as a fight style for Angel, but, you know, I'd like to fill in that blank.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. I know that I'm all macro over here, but I've just been thinking a lot about the way that the episode positions love. Like, I mean, it's called Heartthrob, and there's like four, as I noted them, there's four pairings, right? There's Angel and Buff, Angel and Darla. Mm-hmm. There's what's his face, James and Elizabeth, and then there's the like college couple in the car, which
those
I feel
losers.
Like, yeah. And I feel like they're like so there for a reason of like, what are we looking at as like love? What does Angel feel like he's lost with the like death of his true love, and like what's the difference between what he has with Darla? There's just like that's the whole through line, right? Mm-hmm. Of like looking at those couples.
As Hathaway would ask, what is love?
I literally just bought that song to put it in a podcast, so I think it was the mailbag that we literally just put
you
that
did
song
yes
in.
You spent money. Congrats.
No, actually I didn't. I illegally downloaded it.
Oh yeah, I mean I already had it illegally downloaded, so you could just ask me. Don't hurt me no more. Yeah, so in these 3 months also, Fred has found a room in the Hyperion, and she has not left that room. She's been holed up for 3 months. So, of course, I love Angel Investigations. I feel like they could be a bit more sensitive to Fred. Cordy makes a good point that Fred is trading 1K for another.
Mm-hmm.
But then she says that basically what Fred is doing is the opposite of strong. Because I think Cordelia has like a very specific view of what quote unquote strong is.
Yeah.
It's it's the opposite of being a cry Buffy, obviously, we know.
Mm-hmm.
A cry, what was that? What word was that?
Cry B word. She's not a cry B word. So, and it's also kind of sucking up your trauma and moving on, which is not good, but that is something Cordelia has learned to deal with.
Yeah.
And is dealing with in this episode from the pain of her visions. So to her, that's what strength is. Cordy, talk to someone, girl. We love you.
I know. Well, they should all be. I mean, I feel like this season of both shows is really begs the question, why do we not have therapy here? Why is nobody talking to anybody about all of these traumas? Like, I understand that 2001 was a different landscape than 2020. I get it. I get that. I get the trope of like the Cordelia person who is like the way a woman is strong is like burying it all and blasting through the next thing. But, you know, you have a girl upstairs who hasn't come out of her room in months. Like, she probably needs some fucking help, you guys.
Yeah, it's therapy, much like cell phones, is the enemy of storytelling, supposedly. Cell phones really are the enemy of storytelling, whereas therapy is helpful and, you know, everyone should just get yes. therapy. I mean, at this point, The Sopranos had premiered in 1999, so I'm sure lots of TV shows were like, we're going to do therapy now, too. But Angel didn't get on that tip, obviously. Riverdale, historically a show where all the children needed therapy, and I would constantly write that in my reviews, and then I stopped reviewing it, and then Gina Torres showed up as their therapist, as though the show was attacking me personally for quitting writing about it, but that's neither here nor there.
But yeah, Fred, what is the actress's name who plays Fred?
Amy Acker.
I couldn't think of it today. I think she's fucking phenomenal. I mean, her performance in this, I mean, in the episodes we saw in season two as well, but particularly how she shows up in this scene where we see her in the room and then how she shows up with Angel once he returns. She just does a really brilliant job.
The only thing, as someone who loves Fred, the only thing that I don't like about Amy Acker in this episode is her Southern accent.
Well, it's, I mean, if you're gonna compare accents in the show, she does a stunning job.
Well, here's the thing, here's what LaToya taught me, Kristen. Amy Acker is actually from the South.
I mean, okay, so she actually is from the South. She is from she is from Texas, and this is a Texan accent, so mm-hmm.
Is so what's your though? Your what is your issue with the accent? You don't think it sounds accurate? You, Jenny Owen Youngs, having spent so much time in Texas?
I have spent a bit of time in Texas. I guess Texas is so enormous, it could house nearly infinite mm-hmm. variations on accents. It just feels a little like over the top. But, you know, that's just probably my naive.
I feel like, and I mean, please, any Texans, write in and correct all of us. But, you know, I feel please. Like Amy Acker, the actress, is making the choice to combine probably what she knows of her own Southern accent with this like mousiness that she's bringing to Fred. And so that probably right. like tweaks with how the accent shows up, because there is that like little edge of like not a Southern belle sound to it, but like that. I don't know, that like politeness lilt to the Southern accent that she does. So I don't know what I'm talking about. Right. I can't believe I just used the word lilt. Somebody shut me up.
No, keep going. Now I want to know what else you have to say. Lilt. The other thing that they're just kind of ignoring in Fred's behavior is that, so she's here, she's saved by Angel, she's back on Earth, she's with Team Angel, and then Angel immediately has to leave for 3 months to mourn the B word.
Yeah.
Basically, mm-hmm. her support system is immediately gone, and none of them are stepping up to the plate to help her. Yeah. Either because they didn't have the patience, or they just are like, this is Angel's responsibility, pretty much.
Yeah. It's surprising. I mean, I understand that like Cordelia has some selfish streaks in her, and maybe she's focusing on the wrong elements of strength. But like I could see Wesley maybe not recognizing that there's an issue, but Gunn and Cordelia both are characters that I feel like would have recognized that Fred needed a little help, and would have like gotten that for her in some way.
Yeah.
Also, like, what else do they have to do? Like, they spend all of their time together. We, with the exception of like Cordelia hanging out with Harmony and Wesley briefly dating Victoria, they don't Virginia. Have like, oh, sorry. Wesley briefly dating Virginia. Gunn has other friends, but do Cordelia and Wesley? I mean, now that
Gunn has other friends, but is he seeing them? Because he definitely wasn't at the end of season two, and that got one mm-hmm. of them killed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I doubt Gunn wants to show his face after that, honestly.
Yeah.
So they've all got loads of time and a shortage of excuses.
Yeah.
With regard to taking care of Fred for the 3 months that Angel is gone.
Oh my God. It's like Fred and Faith should have a hang and talk about the neglect faced by both. You know, they would get along. I think they would get quite along, as a matter of fact.
Oh no. I hope they don't accidentally kiss.
Oh no. What just happened?
This is where I again plug the series Person of Interest, and I'm going to say in a lot of ways Sarah Shahi's character is like Faith. So you have Sarah Shahi and Amy Acker, the OTP of that show. That's canon. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now that is a canonical pairing. One could, yes, carry on. Albie, excuse me, this is the sound of me writing the fanfic.
Oh, there's already plenty of fanfic.
Naturally.
I do plan to make this podcast 100% more horny, so...
Which is like speaking of horny, we glossed over something very important when Angel was distributing his gifts to his friends upon his return. Angel gives Gunn a small human head, and as Angel is leaving the room, Gunn says, "Thanks for the head, bro." 1080p HD.
I did notice that.
Working together, the heat of battle. You know, sometimes slaying makes you horny and hungry, is what I have heard from reliable sources.
I mean, between that and Gunn saying, doing it with the demons. What an episode for Charles Gunn. And so, because none of his friends are useful, Angel finally returns. And makes Fred feel a little bit better. And I said it in No Place Like Plurtzger, but I'll say it again. I understand extremely why Fred is so smitten with Angel. He just, to her, like every scene they have, he is like perfect hero guy, basically. Mm-hmm. The care and understanding he has when he is with her in their scene is something she didn't have for 3 months, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, he's a hunk. You know, you got to give it to the guy.
He's wearing that blue button up. Hunk,
but he's emotionally unavailable and does not have the self-awareness to not push her glasses up in a very, like, sort of slippery slope to romantic kind of way.
Yeah, Angel just, like, he doesn't understand the line between taking care of somebody and
like taking care. Yeah.
There it is.
God damn it. So he's taking care of her and just being sweet and understanding, because I feel like this is kind of like what Angel was like when he was on the streets of New York in a way, only he was not confined to a certain space. Like, he understands Fred the way he understood Faith, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would have been great for her to have for the past 3 months, basically.
Right, right.
Yeah.
God, and then she gets like a half second of it, and I feel like the hotel is under attack, and then she gets like another half second later, and he's like, get back to your fucking room!
Fred does say something in you know, her ramblings to Angel about how she's waiting for the click where it all makes sense. And that, honestly, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
That is an understandable feeling, which I feel, again, this is why I'm like, why weren't you guys just there for her? Because I feel like that's something they could have gotten, even if they didn't get a lot of her other ramblings, you know?
Absolutely. Like, she, yeah. I mean, I feel like as a character, or at least what we know of her so far, she is somebody who logically understands her feelings and her, like, emotional place. And that doesn't, of course, I mean, understanding where you are logically does not remedy where you are emotionally. But, like, she definitely has the tools to explain in clear enough terms that she's not okay, and that all of the behavior that she's exhibiting is a means of either trying to escape feeling not okay or to fix not feeling okay. She, you know, she communicates it in an instant to Angel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And although, you know, when the click finally happens, like, that's not going to be a good moment either, because then reality really sets in, and then you have to reckon with all these things you should talk to your therapist about.
Yes, get a fucking you need a demon sensitive therapist. I understand they're harder to find, but, like, figure it out, guys.
I mean, Lorne definitely has to know one, or just talk to Lorne.
I was just going to say, actually, Lorne is the therapist. Lorne would be a fantastic therapist. Poor Lorne. Yeah. I feel like this is always Lorne's, like, task. People come to him and they're like, please fix me, Lorne.
And then he does. Yes.
And he does.
Let's talk about Cordy's painful vision. It's getting worse, you guys. These visions are killing her, she literally says.
But, like, they also have gotten this, like, MapQuest upgrade. They're like... Okay, she used to just get flashes of monsters in an alley, and now it's like Wilson Hall, or Wilson College, Bonner Hall, room 918. Everything is just like within the frame of her vision.
Yeah.
But do you think there's any correlation between the specificity that is seeming to like increase and the pain that is seeming to increase?
It's like she's getting more powerful. The visions are getting more vivid. But with that is the price. These visions are now killing her. And you know what? You should write that all in your Shanshu prophecies, everyone.
Oh, God.
Noted. Noted. Yeah. Let me just update my...
She's
that's
really
the, that's the terminology I'm using, by the way. Write that in your Shanshu prophecy.
I think Charisma Carpenter, too. Like, this reminded me of... I can't remember what the episode was. It was an episode of Angel. And the episode... in the episode, she had to take on sort of all of the visions at once. So she was, like, feeling all the pain in the world.
Yes, that is the season one finale to Shanshu in LA.
Oh, must have been you saying Shanshu. That just like rung a bell for me in my brain. But I think she does such a great job as an actor taking us from Cordelia, because Cordelia has like a very specific presence. And so there's something about the journey from her specific place to when she is sobbing on the floor or like, you know, even in the B word show. When, you know, she's impaled and she's in the hospital, like the fall for her from her center strength to devastation is one that like personally kills me, destroys me.
Let this be a warning to college students making party flyers.
Never print everyone invited
because that includes vampires, apparently.
I love that little tiny thing.
Yeah, we should also talk about Fred and her, because the room in the Hyperion is her home. That's why Angel has to be invited in, despite, you know, this being his hotel.
Right,
I mean, he owns it, but with like forged files. So
yeah, she's written on those walls quite enough for it to become her established and protected home.
How many fucking rooms are in this hotel and what are they doing with the rest of them?
There's a lot and they're not doing a lot.
They're probably full of little... Speaking of rats, there's probably some mice up in there at the very least.
But yeah, things aren't going great for Cordelia, but luckily she has the best roommate ever, which made me think, oh, are roommates actually good?
Ghost Dennis, I think I've said it inside of Angel on Top before. I've probably even said it inside of Buffering before, but like... Ghost Dennis is my favorite character in like the universe. I love him so deeply. This scene with them is a little interesting. It really takes their like bond to a new level of like he's loofahing her back for her.
Listen, I hope I'm not like showing my ass about like how naive I am about loofahs, but is the way that you would want to use that just taking it off the shelf dry and applying it to dry skin? Is that what you do?
I'm done now. I quit. I quit the podcast.
I also don't think Dennis put enough pressure on that to really do anything.
It's true.
How much pressure can a ghost apply and how consistently?
Well, I mean, if we're to follow the Patrick Swayze ghost, you know, mythos, then you train over time and you develop more skills.
Right.
Ghost Dennis has been around for a while. He does a pretty good job with the loofah, but I think I don't myself use a loofah, but I would imagine you'd want to get it wet first.
Right?
asking all of the hard-hitting questions. But I really think that the question is also relevant to be asked of like, what is their relationship? Are they like best friends? And is that what the show is showing us by like, Ghost Dennis is here. Cordelia is totally comfortable taking her clothes off, getting in the bath. He's scrubbing her back. There's nothing sexual about the way that it's done. And so I just don't know if it's there to tell us how tenderly he cares for his friend, that there is no question of anything like even sexual happening here. It's just...
That's definitely, I think, the tone.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I want my own Ghost Dennis.
Be careful what you wish for.
I know. I did.
Yeah,
you trust me. I thought about it in the middle of a sentence. I thought about it and I said, you will continue. You will request.
Let it rip. Have you guys ever seen so many fucking vampires riding around in convertibles as you see in this goddamn episode?
All these vampires have a death wish and they're like, we can do whatever we want. It's LA, baby.
Like, let me get a convertible that doesn't protect me from the sun. Let me smoke a bunch of cigarettes. Like, vampires are so destructive. They really are. Self-destructive.
But yeah, they're just in the convertible and, you know, they've taken some hostages, a couple from this party. And the girl one, who is the worst one, according to Cordelia's vision, the blonde Elizabeth, she's like, oh, you two a couple? Would you die for her? Or, you know, if I let you go and I kill her, is that cool? And he's like, yep, that's cool.
Oh, God. And then, oh, no, they both survive. That is not going to be pretty.
Thing. Oh, yes, they both survive because, God, I wish we could have seen the scene of her reacting. You were going to let me die so you live?
Literally. I literally was like, oh, man, you're screwed. You wish you had been bitten by a vampire now, man, because you're in fucking trouble.
Good Lord.
She's just better. Like when Jenny left me in the woods with a bear.
Whoa. That is okay. We're not going to rehash
we're
this again.
We're not retelling God the whole bear story here.
Anyway, Angel, the show.
Yes, the show. Correct. But so I want to say something about, I mean, I know we're going to like revisit all these couples and what have you, but I feel like the Elizabeth James love is very much the Spike Drusilla love, right? Like this is, like these are two people who are, the only way they can define love for each other is that they would like die for each other. Romeo and Juliet obviously is used in the episode itself, but it reminded me of a Spike right. and Drew kind of a thing. Mm-hmm.
But Elizabeth is a Drusilla that Angel can easily kill. So he can tell a little story about the past.
Mm. And how delighted are we when we find out we get some fucking David Boreanaz Irish accent.
Yeah, baby.
Wow.
Also, can we just laugh for a minute at what happens right before we get the convertible scene, which is Angel being like, they're headed that way on 6th, and Gunn being like, what are you going to do? And then Angel being like, whoosh, with his fucking leather coat out the window.
He's like, I'm going to do vampire things.
So unnecessary. So unnecessary, and I love it.
And so unlike Angel to be dramatic like that.
I mean, I feel it's very necessary. It's just like, because the show... the episode opens with exposition, which I think it's good exposition, but still exposition. Yeah. And like, see, this premiere is like, I guess, redefining the show, letting you know what it is. It's by itself. It's paired with Seventh Heaven.
So today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream. That's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So James and Elizabeth, they were, you know, hanging out with Darla and Angel before Drusilla and Spike were in the picture, mm-hmm. which, I mean, you would think that these two, after having a pair of, like, a flop couple before, they wouldn't try to have another flop couple with them.
They like a quartet, you know? They like to add a little spice into the mix.
They like to have someone to, like, dunk on, basically.
Oh, God, that really is what they're into, huh? That's, like, one of their kinks, yeah. Having another pair of vampires around that they can just diss.
Right, yeah. So they're in Marseille, 1767. James and Elizabeth are going on about how much they love each other. And Angelus and Darla are like, this fucking sucks. Why did we sire them? Angelus gives them, like, 100 years, kind of like the master did for Angelus and Darla. Mm. And
true.
Kind of like the master, Angelus was wrong.
Yeah, they fucking lived and stayed together. They did better than Spike and Drew.
Did people have mullets in 1767? I don't remember seeing any mullets in period pieces from this era.
It killed me.
They did in France.
Other than his, about James's hair in this flashback, it's just like straight mullet.
Yeah, the locket photo is good too.
This is the hair they had in France in 1767. It was Mulletsville.
Liz gets her locket, and like, I think it's fun because I think it's fun that Angel and Darla know what kind of love, if you want to call it that, they have. Like, they know what they are to each other, and they are fully confident in it. They're fully confident in being like, yeah, go kill her, I don't care. Like, Angel fully knows that she's gonna be fine, and he's just like, fuck it, I'll find her in another 10 years. What's 10 years to a vampire who's gonna live for centuries?
Yeah. In the meantime, also, Angelus and Darla are trying to make it on time for a ship because they are also, and again, they created this accompaniment who's only slowing them down. They're running away from Holtz, a character who was mentioned in season 2's The Trial. And in a flashback, they show Darla leaving Angelus behind in Morocco, basically to leaving him for dead with Holtz, which, you know, that's their love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Their love is like, I have my life, you have mine, we like to fuck. That's their love.
You know? Like, I'll see you when I see you.
Yeah, I'll see you when I see you. I understand that, like, there's intentionality around letting us remember and always remember how evil Angelus is. But I really could have done without the wife repeating on me situation.
Really horrific.
Pretty fucking bad. And like, we get it. We get it. You killed his fucking wife and his family. I don't know that we needed that line to understand. That's my take, but yeah.
How about the foreshadowing of James telling Angelus he knows nothing of poetry?
I know nothing of poetry. I'm going to turn a poet next time. Yeah, that'll show him.
I think his Tai Chi studies and his deep dive into poetry probably all occurred at the same time in his like big self-improvement kick.
He's like,
you know?
Yeah, he's like going through all the digs that have ever been hurled at him and just like undoing
them
one by one.
I'll do this. I'll do this.
What if James was like, you can't even sketch, and that's why Angel started sketching?
You don't even know what charcoal is.
Also, I will just say, I know we clown on Boreanaz's accent, but I will say, this is the best his flashback wig has ever looked.
So, James, fearing nothing, decides to punch a window, steal a locket, and then when the French police show up, he says, come on, you bloody frogs. I would like to apologize on behalf of the show to French people and also Michigan J. we are sorry.
The other thing about them being a proto Spike Drusilla thing, as I noted in the intro, is just the fact that obviously we can't have Spike because he's over on the B word. But it does make me imagine a world in which Spike didn't become as necessary to the B word verse as he did, where he could be the fodder to have in this flashback and then just kill him right at the end of the episode. Because I just imagine the way the entire world of both Be the Vampire Slayer and Angel the series would be if Spike weren't such an important character.
I don't like James as a character. I don't know how everybody feels about James as a character.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's pretty rough. We never really get to know that much about Elizabeth, but I do at least enjoy her a touch. I like her locket. I like her attitude enough. James is just fucking boring, and he fucking kills the dude who informs him and tells him what's up. He's fucking rude. He gets this stupid-ass heart removal. I'm over him. I'm over him so hard. Can we talk about the fact that James gets his heart removed? Can we talk about it?
See, that again, that is something Spike would totally do. And it's, I mean, obviously I love Spike being alive, but it'd be so badass if Spike did that.
That is something Spike would do. And also Drew would be over the fucking moon about it. To have Spike's heart in a jar, that's like literally the stuff Drew is made of.
Also, the fucking exposition vamp who's like, hey, while like James is staring simply on at the fucking crashed convertible from the parking garage, and exposition vamp is like, this is what happened, this is what happened. And then James pushes him into some sun, and he immediately is completely in flames. Now,
so hard.
How many times have we seen Spike have his like hand be in the sun for like 30 seconds and then catch on fire? Or Spike running through the fucking broad daylight with like a blanket trailing over his head? Like, the inconsistency of how fast this vampire completely is entombed in flames is, I thought of you,
Jenny.
Upsetting. Thank you.
I thought Jenny's going to be pissed.
Thank you.
About
I
this.
Just want a little consistency. That's all I want.
I'm sorry. So Angel has told the gang his story of being chased by Holtz and who James and Elizabeth are. And you know what? They're invested. They want to know more of the story. But Angel's a little scamp. He's like, oh, I'll give you a little bit of it. To be continued, Angel says. He literally says that. It's crazy. Angel has really gotten Hollywood since the B word left the network. You know where we're going? We're going to Carrot Toss, baby.
It's seniors night at Carrot Toss?
It is seniors night at Carrot Toss. And like Lorne is singing so aptly, Left My Heart in San Francisco. Love to see Lorne. You know, Jenny and I don't get to talk about Lorne very often, but I mean, what's not to fucking adore about Lorne? And Caritas, which I believe you taught us how to say that correctly in the season finale of Angel on Top, season 2. Thank you so much, LaToya, for that.
That's what I'm here for, pronunciation.
So yeah, right. Lorne is singing at Caritas, and the reason that we're all there is because Wesley and Gunn are there to meet Merle, who is played by an actor whose name I can pronounce, Matthew James. And I am so sorry to tell everybody this, but I was like, fucking Merle. I love Merle. I remember just really enjoying Merle. Let me find out who this guy is, what he's up to right now, what he's doing. I Googled Matthew James and I discovered that his most recent project is a film that I believe he like wrote, directed, and produced and starred in. And the title of the film is Nipples and Palm Trees. The subtitle of the film is Every Guy Deserves a Happy Ending. I am so sorry to report this news to you, but that is what our pal Matthew James has been up to. I texted LaToya and Jenny faster than I've texted anyone in my life. I was like, I found out something bad about Merle.
This makes me want to rip my heart out, honestly.
Imagine. I'm almost too upset to even say 1080 PhD.
Almost.
I'm going to try to separate Merle from Matthew James because I genuinely do enjoy Merle in this episode. And he, what does he do? Why is he here? He tells them about the heart, the slod demon who has cut out James's heart. The next thing I have to say is about how I maybe my biggest turn on in the whole episode is how Cordelia and Angel fight with each other.
Oh my God. Where's my hurling axe? This is all different.
Yes.
Daddy really is home. This old man had a system and they changed it in the 3 months he was gone. Because here's the thing. They know Angel. They know he'll be annoyed by things being different in his home, which is also their business. But at the same time, Angel's not the boss, so they can do whatever they want. Cordelia in her blazer. She's in her blazer at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That blazer.
That will do.
That blazer and that bob. Didn't know I needed
blazer,
it.
Blazer, bob,
breasts.
And... perhaps the biggest turn on of all. Oh my God, not Brett. Well, okay, those are fine too. But I love when a woman in genre film or TV finally puts her foot down and says, "No, I'm not going to go home to be by myself and be vulnerable in that way, because they always come for me when I'm by myself and then I'm the hostage and I hate it." Thank you.
Yeah. Cordelia is just, you know, so much of what we've seen of like a woman interacting with Angel specifically, has been the B word. And so, and like the B word put her foot down a little bit, but not really. Like, not really.
I mean,
she did send him to hell.
She,
but other than that.
I mean, Buffy even had more of a leg to stand on, though, once she put her foot. Oh, God damn it. Sorry, the B word, my own damn rules. The B word had even more of a leg to stand on when she, you know, put her foot down, because she was stronger than Angel and could kick more ass. Cordy doesn't have that, but she does know that being separated is the worst thing to do.
Am I allowed to say Cordelia's line at the end of this episode that is like the embodiment of why I love them like bickering?
Please do. Go ahead.
She says, "I'm Cordelia. I don't think. I know."
It's true.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah.
And that is why we miss her over in the B word, because we got Spike now, but we love Cordy, who doesn't think. She knows.
In the B-verse draft, we won big when we got Cordy.
Yeah, that's true.
Watch these shows like I watch my sports, because I am a jock, as we all know.
Oh, the pod jock. Thank God. Fred choosing this moment to bravely step out of her room. Fred, no.
I'm ready to come
That's
out.
Not the sound of company.
Sweet
That
Fred.
Is not the sound of company.
She doesn't remember. She doesn't know.
Oh, true. Yeah, she might be all fucked up on context.
Yeah.
Incredible fire extinguisher chuck from Cordelia. Mm-hmm. That is some impressive, I don't know, shot putting? what are heavy things you throw for sport? I'm asking the pod
jock.
Discus?
Yeah, that's also a thing.
Help us.
You're both right. Like, you're both correct.
Wow. Maybe there's three pod jocks, Jenny.
Hell yeah. High five, chest bump.
Oh no.
But dumping Gatorade over your head. I love sport.
So, right, Fred comes out and is all scared, etc., goes back to her room, and then they, like, sort of divert into the sewers, giving me what might be one of my favorite exchanges in this episode, if not my favorite, where Cordelia, who's so fucking brilliant, she's got it all up here, is like, does he have a ring? Did you see a ring on his finger? I remember this. It was called the Gem of Mara. And then Angel, like, rolling his fucking eyes, is like, no, I obviously looked to see if there was a ring, and it wasn't a ring. And then Cordelia is like, did the Amara people make cufflinks or belt buckles? And I want to reach through the television screen and kiss her, because I love her so much.
I mean... Ugh.
That's good stuff.
Angel is frustrated, but these are valid questions.
And I
do love, and I think especially because they're both having an argument and they are fleeing for their lives. I think this episode has a great balance of the comedy and drama of Angel. I think this is like an episode that shows that Angel, the show, has kind of figured it all out. And I was even noting to you guys before that, like, the promos for the WB for this season of Angel also kind of changed, where they had, like, the super serious drama thing, and then it would pivot to, like, the comedy beat, where before it was just, like, all drama, and this is a serious show, serious man things, Angel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hungry man.
But yeah, I agree. I think I've said, I don't know where I've said this, but you know that one of my hot takes is having, when I had watched the first few episodes of Angel and I had watched the first few episodes of The B Word season on season, 6-3, I was like, ooh, Angel's got their shit more figured out right now than I think B does over where she's hanging out. And like, listen, the seasons will unfold, but I will say that 1-1, Angel's in the lead.
And we will be hearing more of that throughout this season of Angel on Top in Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner.
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner. It's all Riley Dotson. What the fuck? It 40 is hot. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
Because Kristen is just so enamored by this season of television, we couldn't just let her be on one episode. Oh, no. So Kristen's Corner throughout Angel on Top season 3 will have Kristen's opinions on the episodes. What is she thinking about Cordelia's bob? What is she thinking about Angel's button-ups? Hey, what's she thinking about Fred's accent? We'll find out all of that and more.
Thank you so much.
It's so great that Kristen's opinions are valued to the point where they need to be in every episode. That's so
I mean,
great
sometimes we
Kristen.
Can have Jenny's jar.
Congrats.
That can be in a few episodes.
Jenny's jar.
It's a little
that
thing.
Sounds...
It's a little thing. It's Jenny's jar because it's where you give your 2 cents.
Wow.
Hot.
Wow.
Okay,
Toya.
I love it.
Wow.
So now we are on public transportation in Los Angeles, which is popping, you guys, for the first time ever.
Listen, I have taken public transportation in Los Angeles. I'm sure, well, I'm not sure that both of you have, but it is usually not that crowded on public transportation.
Especially
in Los
not
Angeles.
The metro. Like, this is like,
no, the, no, no. That, I should say, yes, the metro.
Yeah, they're actually using a New York subway system, which I love to
exactly.
see. But that's not reality.
No, it's not my experience has not been my experience of the subway in Los Angeles. However, thank God that they take the subway, because if they hadn't taken the subway, we would have never gotten to see James turning into like some kind of insect jumper. Like the
he
way
turns, he does
so
that
creepy. It's so
before
X-Files.
He turns into
yeah.
Senator Kelly from the first X-Men movie, like right before he turns into water.
And like doubling down on his shittier version of Spike bit, he engages in a subway fight. We've seen a subway fight before.
Wow, good call, Jenny.
I do think him ripping the seat out of the subway car and using it
yes.
to hit Angel is a lot cooler than Angel's move of borrowing somebody's crutches
yes.
and then kind of using them like little bat wings.
That is cool because Cordelia has to catch the guy, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That does rock.
I mean, like, I guess, like, the purpose of this exchange is to wound Angel, right? To,
yeah,
like,
we should talk more about all of the things James is saying, basically.
Yeah.
Because James is going in on Angelus, as he knows him,
right.
to not know anything about love. Why'd you do it? You just know, you like, why'd you kill Elizabeth? You just did it for fun because you're a sick bastard. Which, it's... Mm-hmm. I guess it is a matter of, you know, the 90s/early 2000s that so many people don't know that Angel has a soul. Like, some know, and then, you know, they spread it. But a lot of people are just like, he's still Angelus, right? And then they get a rude awakening.
It's not like he's, like, on Twitter, like, tweeting from and recently ensouled Vamp69. Brooding today. Brooding once more. Brooding again.
Which, when I was just searching for things about, like, Angel's fighting influence to see if there's anything I could find, I did find, like, a Q&A with David Boreanaz from, like, a fan site, to which he said he's not set up on email yet. So, like, back in the day, he was not set up on email yet.
But, yeah, like... James's line of like, I lived, you existed. I felt like he was saying that as a dig toward him and Darla. But like, yeah. That's what kind of ungrounds Angel to think about, like, the fact that he did have one true love, at least to date, and that he didn't get to be with that person and also didn't get to be with her when she died.
Yeah. James has this vision of love that, you know, you can't live without this person, literally.
Right.
And basically, if Angel had truly loved B, he would have, like, killed himself, basically, after she died, which is very toxic. They bring up Romeo and Juliet, which is, of course, not a romance. It is a tragedy. We should all remember that.
Uh-huh.
You should not die if your lover dies. That is not a healthy relationship. And Angel, Angel hasn't figured it out because he needs the brains of the operation. Cordelia.
Yes. Cordelia, who is not the woman he loves, as they make clear.
I really like the comedy moment we get where Angel's like, I'm different now. And James is like, oh, so you're not the same man who screwed Darla and couldn't care less what happened to her? And Angel's like, oh, shit, no, I haven't
he's like,
changed.
What'd you hear?
Oops.
Oh, he's before.
Like, what did they tell you? Oh, you mean 200 years ago. Yeah. Cool. Right.
The fight doesn't have really a conclusion. It's just James turns into Senator Kelly from X-Men the movie.
So we
dude,
think of,
so unsatisfying.
Was it
so
6
weird.
Hours? Was that the math? Was it? It must have been six.
It must
hours,
have been six
right?
hours and not yeah. 6 days, weeks, years. I think that is also a good way to start off Angel, where it's like you have this villain of the week, and they don't even really defeat it. It just kind of ends, and Angel has to sit with himself. And you know what? I think Angel should be sitting with the WWWB.
What possibly could you mean, LaToya?
So here's the thing. None of these characters are going to therapy. And you know what? We think that's bad. So since he won't do any real therapy, maybe he should do some television therapy. So a new segment on Angel on Top, because I am deranged, is I will be recommending to the character of Angel, or maybe even other characters, possibly, what episode of television they should watch on their network, the WB, to, you know, help them move forward with the issues they're facing. Hit the music.
WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma, and here's the episode that he needs to see.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually going to recommend an episode of the WB that premiered the same year, a few months earlier, February 16th, 2001. It is the Gross Point episode, Passion Fish, which is episode 16 of its one and only season, the penultimate episode of Gross Point, which, for people who don't know, Gross Point was a half-hour sitcom on the WB that was created by Darren Star, creator, of course, of Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place, eventually Sex and the City, Younger. And this comedy was a satire parroting his experience working on Beverly Hills 90210. On this series, actress Lindsay Sloan played a character who was basically a Tory Spelling proxy that, based on initial viewings, Aaron Spelling called Darren Star to not do that. So they made her less Tory Spelling, although she was clearly supposed to be Tory Spelling. But in Passion Fish, Sarah Michelle Gellar cameos as herself, as a number of WB stars did at the time on Gross Point, because Gross Point was basically a struggling WB series about a struggling WB series called Gross Point. So you get Sarah Michelle Gellar. She is in the same yoga class as Lindsay Sloan's Marcy. And Marcy and Sarah Michelle Gellar have become close friends. To the point where Marcy believes that Sarah Michelle Gellar is in lesbians with her. So the episode is navigating that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's there is a kiss. Because
what?
There's a kiss. So
Sarah Michelle Gellar loves to kiss women.
Loves kissing women.
Acting.
Lindsay Sloan Lindsay Sloan is also
hear my air quotes.
Sarah Michelle Gellar's real life best friend, like since they were kids. So you know, sometimes you gotta kiss your best friend.
Best friend, air quotes. Okay.
But yeah,
sorry, Freddie.
The episode has Marcy inviting Sarah Michelle Gellar to be on Gross Point, which Sarah agrees to as long as she gets to kiss her on the show.
Whoa. So that's a lot of layers. Yeah.
So the episode is a lot of navigating that relationship and then coming to terms with a certain thing at the end. I think that if Angel could watch that episode, he would finally come to terms with the loss of the B word, because besides the B word, this is the last thing that Sarah Michelle Gellar ever filmed for the WB, which is crazy. Gross Point and Be the Vampire Slayer were the things she filmed before she was like, I'm out of here to be on UPN.
I'm sorry. I have to go watch that episode of Gross Point
You should watch all of Gross Point, but yeah, start with that.
Wow. What an honor to be a part of the very first WWWB segment here with you, LaToya. Cannot wait to find out. We're going to have a whole new series to watch at the end of this season, which will just be all of the episodes that Angel has watched through the season.
Oh, what a night. So once all that chaos on public transportation is over, Cordelia and Angel, you know, they have a little bonding moment at the end, in which, by the way, I love the Hyperion set and everything about it. Is it like the best Angel the character set, like better than the mansion, better than his little apartment?
I think it is. I think it's the best. I think it's most suited. Angel is where he belongs.
I agree.
Better than the rat-filled streets of New York.
Well, I mean, at that point in his journey, that is also where he needed to be. So
better than that warehouse that Angel drew Spike and the Anointed One all briefly cohabitated.
That was pretty good, actually. I actually did really enjoy that space.
That's number two.
Angel thrives in large, open concept spaces, you know, where he can really stretch out, have a lot of different burning flames in various corners.
Yeah, with the mansion, like there are literally no doors or windows. That was asking for death. At least with the hotel, you know.
There's places you can hide.
Yeah, there are, again, doors and windows. Those things are important. And that's what Cordelia tells Angel.
Yeah, well, and right, Cordelia, she doesn't think she knows, and she's like, dude, you know what you're doing? You're, like, living, and you're fucking fighting, and that's honoring her. That's honoring the person that you loved, because if she were here, she would want you to be doing those things.
This is one of many great Cordelia Angel scenes in this episode, and I think that it's making clear, especially this season, that the show is definitely a two-hander, because the way they promoted the show, like, obviously, it's Dave Boreanaz, he's Angel. But, like, a lot of those, you know, WB backlot were standing right in front of the WB and the frogs there. Like, they would always, it would always be David and Charisma. Like, they would both be the ones who would be in those backlot things and promos. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always promoted as their one and two on the call sheet. And I think season three really hones in on that. Which is good, because they have a great relationship. And the show's always at its best when it gets on that, and what their relationship is at, like where it's at, how she's feeling with it, how he's feeling with it. Yeah.
And that, like, you know, Cordelia, I mean, we've known Cordelia from the beginning of Angel as someone who has known him since before. And so what more of a moment for them to really come together than when the like cornerstone of how they met, the person that is like their shared knowing, has died. You know, obviously a much bigger loss for Angel than for Cordelia, but that, I don't know, I think if you suffer a loss, it's always the people, even if you haven't seen them in years, it's always the people who knew you when you knew them, when you were in their life, that you go to for like comfort and who can understand most, because they were a witness to it. And Cordelia, although not you know, her best, not B's best friend, Cordelia was a witness to a very intense period of time with the two of them.
Yeah, like Wesley knows a little bit of it, but he doesn't fully know. He was still on the outside when he was there.
He was still busy trying to kiss Cordelia, let us never speak of it again.
I mean, in his defense, who doesn't want to kiss Cordelia?
That's true.
Which is the perfect transition into Fuckwatch. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing.
Fuck watch. For any new listeners, Fuck Watch is well, it's the segment where we pick who or what we want to fuck. It really is that simple.
Thank you so much.
Wow, it almost sounded like somebody else was like in there saying fuck watch. I don't know if my ears deceived me, but
maybe. So this is difficult for me because if I remember fuck watch rules correctly, you can't say someone yeah. more than once. So that's why I can't say Cordelia with that blazer with that bob. What if you go? I had to think.
Well,
Jenny, what do you got?
I'm ready. Broad of shoulder and tall of inseam and cool and light and appropriate for a variety of seasons. I choose Angel's retreat outfit. Me and that retreat See, outfit. Because, we're going to get to know each
because
other.
Because you're not on every episode, so you can just like go with Angel immediately.
But she cheated. She didn't go with Angel. She went with the outfit, Latoya. She doesn't want the outfit. Punk inside. She just wants the outfit.
I'm not even saving Angel for a rainy day. My truest love of the episode is simply his retreat outfit.
You know what? Ugh. Fuck it. I am choosing Cordelia with that blazer and that bob.
Yeah, Latoya!
I literally searched the recesses of my mind. I was like going through season three and I'm like, I know that's a good choice. I know that's a good choice. But you know what? In my heart of hearts, this is the choice.
Yeah. And you know what? Live your life. Live your life.
And I know you're all like screaming at me. What about him waiting in the wings? What about his birthday? I know. Don't you think I know?
I mean, Jenny and I do have an advantage in that we're not going to be on all of the episodes, but we have a disadvantage in that we don't know which episodes we're going to be on. So we could be eliminating something very important. But Latoya, inspired by your energy, I'm going to go pregnant Darla at the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a close Barla. Second to Angel's outfit.
Fucking Darla, but like after she fucking picks up that motherfucking lime and is like, good night. Yes. I will pick Darla. Thank you very much.
And now we can talk Darla, which again, an epilogue to the episode. Because the episode is clearly over.
They give you like a full hero shot. Yeah. Like they're all like weapons up, walking away. And you're like, wow, what a great premiere. Skrr!
And then we're in Nicaragua, baby, where they speak Spanish and not foreign language.
Oh my God. Oh, captions.
And this is how the show does a little cheat because obviously Julie Benz is already credited as special guest star because she's in the flashback. So why would you expect her?
Very smooth.
Wow.
Very
they don't have to do the crediting at the end because she's already been in the episode. She's been there.
Holy shit. That is brilliant. I didn't realize that because I fucking hate that shit. I hate how you're spoiled with the special guest star shit. It drives me nuts.
Angel and Buffy are pretty good about, I think, I don't want to say they invented it, but like it kind of seems like the surprise, and we're going to credit them at the end, is very much an Angel and B-word. I already said Buffy again, but whatever. B-word thing. Like in the season two premiere, the final scene is Faith and Angel, and then during the end credits, it's special guest star Eliza Dushku. They give you an actual surprise instead of telling you, well, she's here, and you're just going to have to keep waiting. Shows even now don't really do that. Like you'll be like lucky with streaming, we'll have like end credits anyway, but you know, some shows don't do that and they still have, you know,
They blow everything. It's like, who wants to fucking... Ugh. Sorry, I like heard most of what you said, but for part of the time I was just imagining Darla at the bar. What a reveal! What a fucking reveal!
Hey, Darla's fucking pregnant, man! She's
like
so fucking
really
pregnant. She's like ready to go. She's like...
Given everything that happens in this episode... Would you imagine that this is how it ends, basically?
Literally never. I almost forget
never
every
in a million
time,
years.
To be honest with you.
And you're just like, oh, yeah, she's at the bar. She's pregnant.
It's just wonderful the way they do it, that this fucking guy comes in and is like being all fucking, I'm a dude and you should have a drink and then you should like fucking make out with me or whatever. And she's so over it.
This fucking dude sucks because, you know, of course he does. But I do like that once you realize she's pregnant, it's like, oh, his reaction to her is like, what the fuck? You're pregnant and you're just like fucking pounding him back. That's what his like reaction actually is to her. But you don't know it initially.
Oh, I don't even think I realized that in watching it 50 times. Now that makes sense.
Wow.
And that's more of what you can hear in Kristen's corner.
Literally a summary of of Kristen's Corner is I didn't even realize that, and I've watched it 50 times. Wow. Yeah, but fucking, I mean, just an incredible, incredible reveal. What is going to happen next? Holy shit.
Yeah, we got a pregnant vampire, and last we checked, that's not supposed to happen.
Sure isn't.
Uh-huh.
Sure the fuck isn't. Is that baby a vampire, too? Did two vampires make a vampire? Do two vampires make a human? Do two vampires make a worm demon? Who will know?
More snake demons in the B-verse, please. So that was Heartthrob. Yes, we did it.
What an episode. What a fucking season of Angel. I am like very excited for all of the incredible people that you're going to talk to this season. But I am thankful that I get a corner because I'm just so excited about it. LaToya, we're so happy that you're here in the universe with us to teach us all the things that we need to know about Angel and the B word. Truly, I think you'll be teaching us about both universes with all of the knowledge that you carry.
So much knowledge just spills out of my head and I'm like, what did I forget? So that has been Angel on Top. Our next episode will be season 3, episode 2, That Vision Thing. You can find me on Twitter at LaFergs, LaFergs. I do not have Instagram. I am an old. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. If you also want to hear me talking about vampires with moral and ethical dilemmas, you can listen to my podcast, The Vampire Diaries. It is 125% hornier than this podcast, I will say.
You only just got started.
I was going to say, because I'm trying to be professional and like smart here, as opposed to there. I just like am dumb and I'm just like, well, you know, he's hot, she's hot. So that's me on that.
You just set yourself up to get a lot of emails being like, but LaToya, we want horny LaToya. Please.
Oh, God.
If you want to support this podcast and LaToya, you can support on Patreon, where you get real fun things. Like sometimes Jenny and I will do an Angel watch with you. We just finished one with Heartthrob. So angelontop.com will take you there to that space.
Please support me. I was going to do an Oliver Twist accent and I decided against it. Okay, I'll do it.
It couldn't be any worse than David Boreanaz.
Nope.
Please support me.
Yes.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.